sitting in a chair for breakfast, and for the ever since the end of May, I woke up one morning and my leg was very painful. So this muscle here and back here, it's been that way ever since. So I've been, you know, having to deal with this, and mostly I can sit. Zazen is usually the easiest position for me, believe it or not. But not for too long. I don't know how that works, but it's really been a kind of problem because it becomes very painful, and this is the kind of problem that takes a while. Rahul had a similar kind of problem. Took him 6 months. So I haven't sat in a chair yet, but this morning was the first time. Usually in the morning it's the most painful, stiff. And then during the day, you can't hear, right?
I can hear, but I'm straining. If we could have
That's what I was wondering. That's why.
Keep speaking, please.
That's better, right?
Okay. Sergeant, I think the microphone is turned the wrong way. No, not that one. The recording device is turned the other way. Yeah. You won't be picked up.
We'll be picked up.
Thank you. So anyway, this is something that I work with, and from time to time in my 45 years of practice or whatever it's been, I had a leg or knee or sciatic problem, but I've always managed to figure out how to work with it. And so that's just been my practice. How do I work with this? How do I work with this? So now I'm dealing with how do I work with this? I just take it one sitting at a time. But I exercise, I keep exercising, because I think that's important. Keep walking. And sometimes walking is difficult. I still do it because it's important to keep moving, I think. And to rest. But it's pretty constant, but it has a low ebb, you know. So anyway, I know that everybody has some problem, and I see the whole section. The bleachers. The bleachers over there. So I'm happy to join you. Well, it's also a kind of ego thing, you know, that's associated with sitting in the chair, you know, gosh, you know, like, I have to sit in the chair. But actually, it's a good way to sit, and I actually enjoyed my breakfast this morning sitting in the chair. It was a new experience. There's something very neat about it. You have more room for your oyoki cloths. Anyway. It also gives me a lot more sympathy, you know, for everybody and all your aches and pains. You know, sometimes it sounds like I'm dismissive, but I'm actually not. Because my way is just to always keep working with how I can do this. You know? expected everybody, because in this situation, everyone has to decide for themselves what their, how far they will go, or what their capabilities are of sitting. And so I don't demand something from people. It's really between you and your doctor. So I don't want to cause anybody any problems. I just have my own way, and it's just the way it is. But I'm still doing it, so that's the way I feel about it. Anyway, I just thought I'd let you know what's going on with me.
Reverse Doga song.
Reverse Doga song. Do you have any advice? So today, I'm going to present a long, not too long, a teaching of Master Hongzhi, which I've been talking about. I used Master Hongzhi's practice instructions during our class. And so I want to continue with Master Hongzhi's teachings. And so there are several of these wonderful teachings. One is called the Guidepost of Silent Illumination, and another is called the Guidepost for the Hall of Pure Bliss. And as you know, Dogen wrote a response to Hongzhi's practice instruction about Zazen, called the Acupuncture Needle of Zazen, which you may be more familiar with. But today, I'm going to talk. I'm going to read the comment on his guidepost for the Hall of Pure Bliss. So I just want to talk a little bit about what is bliss. I looked it up in the dictionary, and of course, even though I know what it means, I still wanted to see what other people thought it meant. So, bliss is like exalted happiness or heavenly joy, something like that. And I realized that what we call, what Dogen calls, and what is called Dogen, this is not just Dogen's term. Jiju Yu Zamai. Jiju Yu Samadhi is our blissful practice, blissful samadhi. It's called self-joyous samadhi. And I've talked about this before many times. Jinjuyu Samai is what Dogen calls Shikantaza. You may be more familiar with the term Shikantaza through Dogen. But he also talks about Jinjuyu Samai. Jinjuyu, giving and receiving, but and then of course there's Taju Yu Zamai, which is giving to others. So giving to ourselves and giving to others, or finding the self-joyous samadhi within ourselves and touching others to awaken it in them. So this is actually what he means by bliss. By seeking appearances and sounds, one cannot truly find the way. The deep source of realization comes with constancy, bliss, self, and purity. Its purity is constant. Its bliss is myself. The two are mutually dependent, like firewood and fire. The self's bliss is not exhausted. Constant purity has no end. Deep existence is beyond forms. Wisdom illuminates the inside of the circle. Inside the circle, the self vanishes, neither existent nor non-existent. Intimately conveying spiritual energy, it subtly turns the mysterious pivot. When the mysterious pivot finds the opportunity to turn, the original light auspiciously appears. When the mind's conditioning has not yet sprouted, how can words and images be distinguished? Who is it that can distinguish them? Clearly understand and know by yourself. Whole and inclusive with inherent insight, it is not concerned with discriminating thought. When discriminating thought is not involved, it is like white reed flowers shining in the snow. One beam of light's gleam permeates the vastness. The gleam permeates through all directions. From the beginning, not covered or concealed, catching the opportunity to emerge amid transformations, it flourishes. Following appropriately amid transformations, the pure bliss is unchanged. The sky encompasses it. The ocean seals it. Every moment without deficiency, in the achievement without deficiency, inside and outside are interfused. All dharmas transcend their limits. All gates are wide open. Through the open gates are the byways of playful wandering. Dropping off senses and sense objects is like the flowers of our gazing and listening falling away. Gazing and listening are only distant conditions of thousands of hands and eyes. Others die from being too busy, but I maintain continuity in the wonder of continuity. In the wonder of continuity are no traces of subtle identifications. Within purity is bliss. Within silence is illumination. The house of silent illumination is the hall of pure bliss. Dwelling in peace and forgetting hardship, let go of adornments and become genuine. The motto for becoming genuine is, nothing is gained by speaking. The goodness of Vimalakirti enters the gate of non-duality. So, as we know, Hunger was the propagator of silent illumination practice, silent illumination Zen, which is often criticized by Kana Sen, or proponents of Koan Zen. And of course these two styles are not really two at all. They're really one thing. But one side sometimes criticizes the other through ignorance. Silent illumination or Shikantaza is the practice of the essence of all koans. And all koans express the essence of Shikantaza, or silent illumination. And so we don't discriminate one or the other, or reject one in favor of the other. Koans are wonderful pointers. And but shikantaza is really the essence. So, which is silent illumination. By seeking appearances and sounds, one cannot truly find a way. The deep source of realization comes with constancy, bliss, self, and purity. Its purity is constant, its bliss is myself. So, I think we have to, when we read this kind of poetry, or it's not really poetry, it's poetically, it's like a statement, or using words to express something that words can't express, actually. And so we have to be able to read between the lines, or as Suzuki Roshi would say, to read the other side of the page, so that the words express something, but the meaning has to be what we bring to it, actually. And so by seeking appearances and sounds, one cannot truly find the way. The deep source of realization comes with constancy, bliss, self, and purity. Its purity is constant. Its bliss is myself. When I read these lines, constancy, bliss, self, and purity. Constancy is, I remember, you probably know this, but when I asked Suzuki Roshi, what is nirvana? He said, seeing one thing through to the end. This is like constancy. Constancy is no matter how things are going, the practice remains as the fundamental thing. So practice is what guides us through every circumstance. And when we fall off, we get back on. And we're always falling off and getting back on. Falling off and getting back on. This is constancy, is never losing sight of what is the practice. And constancy and bliss. And when we have constancy, constancy is like the essence of pure practice. So, and purity is the essence of bliss. So bliss arises through purity and constancy. And it's not something that we're always aware of, but it's always there. And when it runs very deep, it gives us faith in the practice. So he says the two are mutually dependent. The two meaning purity and bliss. The two are mutually dependent, like firewood and fire. The self's bliss is not exhausted. Constant purity has no end. Deep existence is beyond forms. So, purity and bliss. I remember when in the class when I was reading this book of Roussarian, the French resistance fighter who was blind, and who said that when he was blind, he was filled with, when he became blind, he became filled with light and bliss. And the light and the bliss were totally dependent on each other and interdependent. So when the light was there, the bliss was there. And when the bliss was there, the light was there. And when he was angry or frightened or in some unwholesome state of mind, it totally disappeared. And then he didn't know where he was. He was confused and lost until the light came back with the bliss. So the bliss and the light were totally one thing. So it definitely reminds me of his practice was so much like this. So then he says, wisdom illuminates the inside of the circle. Inside of the circle, the self vanishes, neither existent nor non-existent. Wanshu talks about the circle a lot, and about the circle of bliss, the circle of light, and the circle of wonder.
I think you just read that constancy and bliss have no end.
Uh-huh.
And Sudhakar, she said, Nirvana is following something to its end.
All the way through.
All the way through. But, so my question is there, there seems to be no end and maybe an end?
End is a way. We have to read the other side of the page.
Uh-huh.
This is where you have to read the other side of the page. If you take every word literally, then you end up in the end is endless.
But there is a provisional end, moment by moment.
No, it's just simply, well, yeah, each moment has a beginning, middle, and an end. endlessly. Yeah, I think endlessly probably is a better word, but, you know, we don't always think of the right word when we're saying something. But later, oh yeah, that would have been better. That's called editing. So, I understand your point, but...
I don't.
Thank you. Wisdom illuminates the inside of the circle. I'll just give you just a little example. He says, with thoughts clear, sitting silently, wander into the center of the circle of wonder. You just kind of wander into the circle of stone. So I looked up the word wonder also, even though I thought I knew what that means. But wonder means like astonishment or surprise or a certain kind of clarity that is not based on anything that is preconceived or habitual, or it's waking up to something that is beyond our usual way of discerning things. So, with thoughts clear, sitting silently, wander into the center of the circle of wonder, and this is how you must penetrate and study. And then he says, with the depths clear and utterly silent, thoroughly illuminate the source, empty and spirited, vast and bright, even though you have lucidly scrutinized your image and no shadow or echo meets it, Searching throughout, you see that you still have distinguished between the merits of 100 undertakings. In other words, you're still not there. Then you must take the backward step and directly reach the middle of the circle from where light issues forth. So, this is echoes what he's saying here. Wisdom illuminates the inside of the circle. Inside the circle, the self vanishes, neither existent nor non-existent. If you say it's not there, that's not true. And if you say it is there, well, that's not true either. It's neither true, it's neither existent nor non-existent. And this is really the essence, neither existent nor non-existent. If you say there is a self, that's not quite right. And if you say there's not a self, that's not quite right. It's neither a self nor not a self. And yet it's a self. And yet it's not a self. The self is not a self.
Would you say this is a state? A state?
A state?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a certain state.
Because we have to aspire to that state.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, aspire to, right. So that, you know, that's a good point. You know, if you don't aspire, if you aspire, you may stumble past. But if you don't aspire, nothing happens.
And that's why it's described.
See, it's pointing at something. It's pointing at something. But don't hang on to the words.
You can't.
No, you can't. And I remember after every talk, Suzuki Roshi would say, there's no need to remember what I said. Because if you hang on to those words, you think you got something.
Mm.
You know? And that's why he always wanted us to sit zazen when he gave a talk. Because just sitting zazen and absorbing, it's like, and after the lecture, people think, what did he say? I don't remember. Nobody can remember what he said. No.
I remember that you and others have occasionally done that. That would be kind of, when we were sitting zazen, you.
Oh, during zazen.
5 or 10 minutes. That was interesting.
Yes. Suzuki Roshi used to talk during zazen quite a bit. And I used to do that. And I have from time to time. Yeah. I remember one time when I was in San Francisco. And somebody complained about it. Somebody was talking to us during zazen. If you're not used to it, it sounds funny. It seems strange because you're supposed to be quiet. But it's very common for the teacher to talk during zazen. Anyway. Intimately conveying spiritual energy, it subtly turns the mysterious pivot. When the mysterious pivot finds the opportunity to turn, the original light auspiciously appears. So even though the light is always there, it doesn't always appear. The mysterious pivot, paravirti means turning on the basis, a revolution on the basis. And this is called seeing through enlightenment, seeing through delusion. The pivot turns. It's like a revolving door or something, and you open the door and there it is, you know. But the door is usually closed. So, and it also refers to the difference between consciousness and Vijnana and wisdom. And it involves the four Vijnanas, the four levels of consciousness and the four levels of wisdom. The consciousness turns in, revolves, and wisdom appears and takes the place of the consciousnesses. You no longer call them consciousness, you call them wisdoms. The wisdom of the round mirror wisdom, the wisdom of equality, the wisdom of differentiation, and the wisdom of action. Those are basically what he's talking about, I believe. In other words, ego turns into wisdom, basically. When ego takes its rightful place in the hierarchy of consciousness, then it actually turns into wisdom. So we have the saying, turn ignorance into wisdom. So that's the process. You know, if there is a process of the turning, the practice is turning, actually. The practice is turning on the center. And it's like, it makes me think of Hui Nong, who was asked to go back to the kitchen and turn the mill to grind the rice. And he's turning the mill and grinding the rice, which is what everybody, this is called practice, turning the mill and grinding the rice. Turning the raw material into flour that you can do something with. So practice is turning the wheel and turning ego. Ego gets ground down into wisdom. You know, and we also say the practice of Sangha is that everyone is practicing together and all the rough edges become smoothed off. So it's really important, you know, that all our rough edges come out. Otherwise, it takes longer for them to get knocked off. Sometimes, like a tough fight, you know. We have this kind of endless practice of knocking off the rough edges so that we work in a harmonious way together, egolessly. And then when we grind off the rough edges of ego, the light has an opportunity to express itself. So intimately conveying spiritual energy, it subtly turns the mysterious pivot. When the mysterious pivot finds the opportunity to turn, the original light auspiciously appears. When the mind's conditioning has not yet sprouted, how can words and images be distinguished? Who is it that can distinguish them? The mind's conditioning has not yet sprouted. It means that before, you know, sprouted is like the Alaya Vijnana. Alaya consciousness has all the seeds. And when they're not activated by habit energy or by, you know, continuous turning of the wheel of conditioning, then before that happens, there's simply openness. So, when the mind's conditioning has not yet sprouted, when the seeds are not activated through our habit energy, how can words and images be distinguished? Who is it that can distinguish them? Clearly understand and know by yourself, whole and inclusive, with inherent insight. that is intuitions, it is not concerned with discriminating thought. When discriminating thought is not involved, it is like white reed flowers shining in the snow. So white reed flowers shining in the snow is like a, you know, they're there, the flowers are there and the snow is there, but they're almost imperceptible. There's a very low contrast. So it's not like they're exactly the same. They're different, but they're also the same. That's the kind of feeling, is like there's not much difference between the flowers and the snow. But yet, the flower is the flower and the snow is the snow.
So, Jim, question in the back. So, Jim, I wonder if, getting back to purity, if this is the purity of this direct perception without anything extra.
No, purity is like the non... this is like purity. This is like an expression of purity.
Purity.
Yeah. So one beam of light's gleam permeates the vastness. The gleam permeates through all directions, from the beginning, not covered or concealed, catching the opportunity to emerge amid transformations, it flourishes. So one beam of light's gleam permeates the vastness. The gleam permeates through all directions. This is like Zazen, sitting in the center of the circle of wonder, sitting in the center of the circle where light issues forth. This is Zazen. And this is light, whether one is aware or not. This is the light gleaming in all directions, not concealed, and catching the opportunity to emerge amid transformations, it flourishes. In other words, it's not limited to the sitting position. This is how you bring, how you extend this through all conditions. It's not limited to the cushion. It's activated through all conditions, and this is the fourth wisdom that I'm talking about, is all of our activity is activated as wisdom and not simply as egoistic activity. Following appropriately amid transformations, the pure bliss is unchanged. In other words, conditions don't affect that blissful truth. The sky encompasses it, the ocean steals it. Every moment without deficiency, and the achievement without deficiency, inside and outside are interfused. So this is kind of like the white, the flower and the outside. Where's the outside and where's the inside? There's, even though we talk about outside and inside, in actuality, there's no absolute outside or inside. So, all dharmas transcend their limits. All gates are wide open. Through the open gates are the byways of playful wandering. Dropping off senses and sense objects is like the flowers of our gazing and listening falling away. Gazing and listening are only distant conditions of thousands of hands and eyes. That's a complex statement. All dharmas transcend their limits. All gates are wide open. In other words, dharmas are here, all things, but our feelings, emotions, thoughts are all dharmas. And so they transcend all conditions. They transcend their limits, and they're not, there's no gate that confines them. through the open gates are the byways of a playful wandering, dropping off senses and sense objects. Senses and sense objects, if you want to discern something through consciousness, there has to be an object and a sense. Right? This is basic Buddhism. So, dropping off senses and sense objects is like the flowers of our gazing and listening falling away. They're talking, there's like sky flowers. Sky flowers is a technical term meaning dreams. Flowers in the sky flowers, delusive dreams, delusional dreams. So dropping off senses and sense objects is like the flowers of our gazing and listening falling away. Gazing and listening are only distant conditions of thousands of hands and eyes. Thousands of hands and eyes, I believe, is a reference to the Buddha of a thousand hands and eyes, Avalokiteshvara of a thousand hands and eyes, and each hand and each eye is a way of helping beings. So, in other words, delusions drop away, and what the motivation for the delusions becomes the motivations for helping people. And then he says, others die from being too busy, but I maintain continuity. In the wonder of continuity are no traces of subtle identifications. Continuity, we talked about that, continuous practice. The continuous practice of now. In other words, you know, we may think of continuous practice as something that's going on and on and on in a certain line, but it's simply being present moment by moment, right now. So there's nothing ever but now. Being in that space where there's just now. Continuity of now, 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 now. That's called samadhi. The ever-renewed present moment. Within purity is bliss. Within silence is illumination. The house of silent illumination is the hall of pure bliss, dwelling in peace and forgetting hardship. I would say forgetting unnecessary hardship. That which is not necessary. We all have some hardship. But maybe he does mean forgetting hardship. Forgetting that something is hard or easy, actually. Is something hard or is it easy? Sometimes something easy is hard. Sometimes something hard is easy. But if we're just in the moment, I mean, if we are really present, we're just doing something, you know. If you're just doing something, someone else may look at you and say, boy, that looks really hard. But to you it's not hard because you're totally at one with what you're doing. And you say, hard? I'm just doing something. So, let go of adornments and become genuine. To get to the essence, you let go of adornments. We take off our jewels, all those things that enhance us. I remember when reading later on in this book, which I didn't read to you, of Louis Leon, the French resistance fighter, you know, who was about 19 years old. He was in the concentration camp finally. And he said, in the concentration camp, you have to let go of all identity in order to survive. You cannot be anybody. If you're anybody, if you're any vestige of being anybody, you'll die. You just have to let go of every vestige. If you, the courageous are the first to go. It was terrible, you know. But when you think about it, but the only way to survive is to be nobody. And all these people who had identities, the rich and the poor and the grand and the ordinary and so forth, just all the same. This is the way you learn to be. The great equality, the great equalizer. And become genuine. The motto for becoming genuine is nothing is gained by speaking. The goodness of Vimalakirti enters the gate of non-duality. This is very famous, as you know. Vimalakirti's thundering silence is entering the gate of non-duality. But we shouldn't be stopped there. If you get stuck there, it's worse than being stuck in duality. So, but we have to understand what he's saying. Great. the goodness of Vimalakirti enters the gate of non-duality. And there's a wonderful koan about that in the Book of Record. I don't know if I have a time for a question or not. Probably not.
You
do you have a question?
You have time for one or two questions.
Yeah. Okay.
You said ego turns into wisdom.
Ego is a transformative. I did say that.
What happens to ego? Is it
Well, ego is not real. The ego is a false sense of self. So when it disappears, there's only reality. So ego does have a place. I mean, the ego, you know, a sense of self-consciousness built on how we relate to the world. So when self-consciousness is ground down, so to speak, then it becomes Buddha consciousness. So self-consciousness, we have both self-consciousness and Buddha consciousness within us. So when self-consciousness takes on the task of motivating practice, it becomes dissolved. It's like sugar in your coffee becomes dissolved, so it no longer has an identity as ego, but the energy is absorbed into your Buddha nature.
Thank you.
instead of your ego nature. So we become Buddha-centric instead of ego-centric. So our life revolves around our Buddha nature rather than around our ego. Does that make sense? I thought that was a pretty good explanation myself. Something as accurately as possible, but it's a reconstruction. Memory is a reconstruction of an event, even though it doesn't seem like it, you know, because automatically you remember. You don't have the experience of reconstructing necessarily. So, I mean, sometimes in the distant past you have to reconstruct, or, you know, but. Well, I remember when da da da, you know. It seems like you're not reconstructing it, but you are.
But is there a purpose?
To, well, yeah, otherwise you wouldn't be doing it.
I mean, is there a benefit?
The present activity is influenced by the past activity. It's like this is the head of the pin, right? I mean, you have to have the whole pin in order to have the head of the pin. But the head of the pin is where 10,000 Buddhas are dancing around in the moment. This is where it's happening. But the past has conditioned the events of the present. And the events of the present are conditioning what will become the present, which we call the future. But it will no longer be the future because it will be the present. So the future is just an idea about what the future present will be. It doesn't exist as a future. It just is an idea because we think that there's continuity. And we experience continuity, but at some point, no more continuity. So, the present includes our thinking about the future and our experience of the past. But that all is right here. There's nothing that's not right here. I mean, it's just, can you step into the past? In a way, you step into the past, you know, by remembering. You step into the past. But you step into the past in the present. Your thinking is in the present. Your experience of the past is in the present. Your experience of the past is not in the past. You couldn't have experienced the past, memory of it in the past when it's happening. So it's all memory. I mean, it's a picture. Our experience of the past is a picture. And of course, our experience of the present is a picture too. And so what we try to do is get beyond the picture. This is what Zazen is, to get beyond the picture. Because we translate our experience into a picture. And, you know, all the things we invent are images of ourself. The movie theater, you know, the movie is a picture of our mind, the way it works. And we can't invent something, I don't think, that is not a picture of the way our mind works. That's why our pictures are limited, because they're limited to the way our mind works. So if we want to experience the unlimited, we have to let go of everything. That's called Zazen, but it's boring. And that's, you know, we create as much activity as we can in order to interest ourselves. Sure. You know, there's an old saying that the nectar of the gods tastes like nothing at all to ordinary person. You know, because ordinary person needs something more tangible, more exciting and, you know, interesting. From the, I mean, there's nothing against that. It's just the way it is. So, but, I mean, and people say, well, why, what's the sense of, why do we need to understand ultimate reality? If you don't need to understand it, do something else. You know, I can't say why. I can hardly say how. But in Zen, how is the, how do I do this? How can I make this happen? How, what's next? What's here? That's Zen practice. Now, well, why did this happen? And how come that happened? And, you know, just how do I take care of this moment? And taking care of this moment determines what will happen in the next moment. That's why it's so important to take care of this moment. Because this moment determines, just like the past determined what's happening now. And what we do now determines, so we have an opportunity, this is called how we change our karma. We have an opportunity on this moment, which is every moment, to go in a direction that's different than the one that's impelled by the past. This is called getting off the wheel, basic Buddhism. And so it's so important what we do now, because we have a choice in every moment. We think, well, I don't have a choice because I have a compulsion. It's true, you know, it's hard to get beyond compulsion. But it's possible.
So grinding down the ego.
Well, that's just
that's not what's going on.
That's just a term. That's a way of speaking.
That's not going to help. But that, that pivot, that mysterious pivot, that's really a great use of words. So I think grinding away is going to not help anything?
Well, you know, like you, that's because you have an image in your mind of what grinding away means.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just let go of that image. It's, you know, think of it, and you don't have to think of it that way. Absorb. You think of it as absorption. You know, it doesn't hurt so much. Right? Think of it any way you want. That's just one way of, that's just the way I expressed it. You can express it in your own way. Absorption.
That pivot is in the center. Anyway, so I just wanted to say that those white flowers in the snow, actually they just shine forth.
Yeah.
They don't get lost.
They don't get what?
They don't get blurred or confused with the snow.
No, they don't.
So I think we...
Yeah, we I just did one or two questions, and look what happened.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tamara.